out and say, well,
you know. By the way.
Yeah.
After you accept the medal, do you generally, you can say a few words?
No, well.
Is that what happens?
No, that hasn't been my experience.
Would.
Yeah, I'd love to. I like to talk.
What about let's talk a bit about the gay games in Vancouver. What was that like to be in an atmosphere that charged and that gay and lesbian positive?
Well, to be blunt, it was awesome. It was the reception was incredible. There were 8,000 athletes from all over the world, and we were received in BC Place Stadium, and there were spectators packed. They had the stadium packed, and we entered, and there were delegations who were organized according to delegations from different countries, and we entered the stadium, and the audience, the people in the stands were just standing and cheering, and it was just incredible. It was just so emotional to be there and part of that, and it was really sort of epic. You know, it was really big, it was large scale, and there were people from all over the world, and there was just an amazing sense of community and accomplishment and recognition. You know, and there are athletes of every caliber in all the different disciplines besides, you know, there's track and field and equestrian and, you know, swimming. There was everything.
How many bodybuilders were there? Female bodybuilders?
I was in middleweight that time, and there were 16 women in my class.
Wow.
And that was and the caliber of competition was great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were women from California, there were women from Seattle, there were women from, there were women from Vancouver, and I think I was the only woman from Montreal. And there was my partner, James Michael Levine, who I went to San Francisco with, and he was competing as well.
How did you do in Vancouver?
Well, in Vancouver, it was my first competition, and I was fourth out of 16 women. Yeah. And for me, that was good enough, just to be on the stage. It was in the Orpheum Theater, which is an old, old, large venue, and it was just incredible, and the people were really, really wonderful and supportive, and just, they were, we went through the audience in the evening show, and we felt like they were going to tear us from limb to limb. Everybody wanted, like, a piece of us, you know? It was great. We were posing in the audience, and it was just great, you know, especially coming from a gay audience. It was gay and lesbian audience, you know?
Describe a routine, or that routine, even.
Well, that routine was, you choose, like, your music a minute and a half. I chose this piece by the Lounge Lizards called the Harlem Nocturne, and it's particularly seductive and sexy, and I just really went there to go on stage and give the people a show and have a good time. Like, I had worked my body to a point where, okay, you know, either you win it or you don't, but you're out there to have a good time, too, and entertain people. They come in the evening show, after the prejudging has been done, people come to be entertained, and you have to just go with it and give them what they want and enjoy it, and, you know, play to the audience and just be warm. And it was great. It was really amazing.
And a routine lasts about how long?
In Vancouver, the routines for the singles were a minute and a half.
Is that a long time?
Sometimes it can feel like an eternity up on stage. A minute goes by a lot quicker. The routines in San Francisco for the individuals were 1 minute, and for the pairs there were 3 minutes, which seems like an eternity plus. And I had competed in pairs in San Francisco for the first time with James Michael Levine.
And what was that like?
It was great. It was great to compete with another gay athlete. We had trained together intensively for at least 4 months before the contest, and we started doing, we worked with choreographers on our routine, and we had this amazing chemistry that, you know, I think was a real statement for the gay and lesbian community that, you know, we worked together on this, and, you know, we had this common goal, and we did it.
4 months of preparation.
Together. We had been training on our own, and we had been working mm-hmm. together on our routine and training together on our bodies and working on part.
So aside from the dieting you're doing before the competition and the training you're doing yourself, you're also choreographing a routine.
Yeah, we were really fortunate to work with some really top Quebec choreographers that were friends of James, and they were really generous with us and did amazing work. And I'm not a dancer, and I just really feel like it takes me a long time to get my limbs coordinated, and they made it so easy for me to do these moves and to feel good about it and to feel comfortable in my body in that way, because it seems so foreign for me, these dance moves, and they just made it really easy, and they were just really generous with us.
So it's a performance as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely.
And how do you feel when you're up on stage?
Just completely high and giving, like an entertainer. You're there to entertain, and you're just completely, it's sort of like superhuman, superhero sort of feeling. You're really larger than life on stage, and it's amazing for that short period of time. Yeah.
I bet.
Yeah.
We're going to take another musical break with a very apt.
The mics, Dykes on Mics, and we're back. And we're with Tracy, who's a female bodybuilder, and we're talking about bodybuilding.
Funny that.
Yep, absolutely. And we're asking questions sort of about Bev Francis, who is renowned to be one of the world's greatest women's bodybuilders. Is this correct?
I think she's sort of one of the world's... For me, she's one of the world's greatest unsung female bodybuilders. I really think that she doesn't get the recognition she deserves because she's not so-called as feminine according to the standards of women's bodybuilding, the way professional women's bodybuilding is measured and judged. Today, I don't think she gets the kind of recognition because she's really... When she stepped onto the stage in that film, Pumping Iron 2, she was really miles ahead of all the other women competitors, and I think she was really what the sport was about, and she really took the sport ahead in leaps and bounds where the sport... I don't think anybody else had sort of seen where the sport would go until sort of Bev Francis came on stage. And, you know, I think she deserved to win because she really was clearly the best physique up on stage, but I don't think people were ready to handle that kind of size and that kind of muscularity on a woman, you know?
So she was an anomaly in the field, really.
Yes, yeah. And I think still she doesn't get the kind of recognition she deserves because I think people in the sport of women's bodybuilding, I think it's professional bodybuilding, it's very political. And, you know, she isn't like a traditionally gorgeous woman like, say, Corey Everson or maybe Linda Murray, who's actually black, which is very interesting. And she's not sort of that kind of attractive face, so-called, I think, that a lot of people look for as an ambassador to the sport, because when you are sort of Miss Olympia, you're sort of an ambassador for women's bodybuilding, mm-hmm. and, you know, that brings money to the sport, because it is another money-making enterprise, you know.
So there's some sort of sexist bias going on in the comparison of men to women in bodybuilding itself?
Definitely. I think you'll always have that problem, especially since the women's sport is run by men, and all the money comes from, you know, men, and I think the Weider family has a lot of, you know, money and support into it, and they have their own fixed ideas of femininity and masculinity, and they tend to dictate that in the sport, even though they're not necessarily judging the contest in that, but they're the people that put the money into the contest and fund them. And I think when you start having sort of more women's run contests and women judged contests, you'll have really a different aesthetic coming into play, perhaps.
Where do you want to go with this next? Do you want to continue for a number of years? Or?
Yeah, well, right now, for me, it's a way of life. It's not something that I think of doing as, you know, today and not tomorrow. It's something that, like, my dad is in his late 50s. He's going into his 60s, and he continues to train as a bodybuilder. He doesn't compete, but he's got a competitive physique for a man his age. And, you know, I kind of use that as my model because it's something that you can do right up until you die and continue training at different levels, and I really like what it does for my body, and I think I'd like to keep that for the rest of my life.
So the idea of stopping isn't really a concept at the moment because...
It's not a consideration for me right now because it's really part of my life. It's something that I love to do, and there's no reason for me not to do it.
We were curious about some of the terms of bodybuilding, because there is kind of a language, isn't there, too?
Definitely, yeah. One of our favorite terms is being ripped. And basically, ripped is sort of an indication of low body fat, and it's when you have low subcutaneous body fat and your muscles, the muscle definition, the striations in your muscles really show up. You know, and there's little body water, you're not carrying very much water, and this is sort of a state, pre-contest state, right before you're on stage. You've dieted appropriately, you've, you know, maybe taken diuretics or something to flush any sort of excess water under your skin out, and you've tanned, and, you know, you're just carb loaded. And carb loading, again, that's another term. What, there's carb depletion and carb loading. There's a system where, of dieting, where maybe a week and a half before the contest, you will cut out all the complex carbohydrates in your diet. And basically, that's where you get your energy. So you're going to be sort of a bit de-energized for like the week before the contest, but you're not really doing heavy-duty training there. You might be practicing your routine and such. So you're going to cut out all the complex carbohydrates from your diet. And the 3 days before the contest, you start eating carbohydrates again, and gradually until the day before the competition. And what this does is you deplete all your muscle supplies of glycogen and ATP, which are the energy sources. And by doing this, when you take in all the excess, the carbohydrates again, your body will store increased levels of glycogen and ATP, which is adenosine triphosphate, which is a basic muscle energy source, right? And what you do is when you get on stage, your muscles are so loaded with glycogen and ATP that they're just pumped. And you haven't been doing any rigorous exercise up to this time. And when you get on stage and you flex your muscles and that, all the water that you have in your body will be in your muscles and the glycogen and APT, and you'll just come out really full and pumped looking on stage.
Wild. Pretty technical.
Yeah, it's really a science. The whole nutrition, I'm just really starting to learn a lot about the nutrition, and I think I know quite a bit about the pre-contest diet, but I really like to learn a lot more about the off-season diet and maintaining your weight and stuff like that. Yeah.
I think that probably. Do we have any more questions? That kind of concludes it.
Quite overwhelming, really.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Tracy.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for this opportunity. It was great.
Step on it, Thelma. They're gaining on us.
All the ways. Relax, honey. Don't get your panties in a bunch.
I don't think you understand, Thelma. Those sirens are drowning out the radio, and if we don't tune in to 90.3 FM soon, we'll miss Hersey.
But Louise, today's Wednesday.
Sure as shooting, it's Wednesday, 6 o'clock on the dot. Hersey's gone primetime, honey. Get with it. CKUT 90.3 FM. Hersey's like an oasis in the desert of patriarchy.
You said it, Louise. Shot a wild turkey?
Look out for the tiger! Woo! Good driving, Thelma!
We're back, and it's Dykes on Mikes, and we're still giggling about that card because the Girls Go Primetime Hersey is moving to 6 to 7 on Wednesday. And we're on 90.3 FM, and it's moving to the same dot on the dial that Dykes and Mikes is on, is which what you're listening to. It's 7:45, and we're talking to Tara, and we're talking about the new kiosk, which is opening at Kiel.
Yes. Well, so what we're... I've been working with a company called Les Créations de Shape, which is a gay and lesbian company. It's run by me and my partner, Merrick, and he's a clothing designer who's been designing clothes for a long time. We used to sell clothes at Preap. We made... a line of clothes there for quite a long time, and now we've decided mainly to focus on women. We prefer to design for women, and that pleases me no end. There is nothing really available for women in town. I mean, if you want to shop for something a bit different or have something made a special order, there's no place to do that. I mean, who wants to shop at Preap, really? So now Kiev, which is at Rachel and Saint-Hubert, there's going to be a kiosk there. It's a small boutique. We're going to have, you know, two walls and all that sort of stuff. And
it's a start, though, right? So,
yeah. It is a start. And it's going to be open presently during bar hours, which is, you know, 6 days a week, closed on Mondays. But soon we're hoping to be able to open it during the day as well because of the way it's going to be built. We'll be able to have it grilled off so nobody can go in the bar. So that should be fun.
How did the company start?
Well, my friend Merrick, he was always making clothes. And we just decided that we were going to make this company. I mean, we were... originally starting off as a catalog clothing store, I mean, just doing catalog clothing, but it's so much money to put out a catalog right away, we decided we would start off with something a bit smaller, and we had been approached to open something at the Taverne du Village, but don't want to deal with those people, so we are working with women at Kiev, and they are really, really up about this. I mean, when we talked to them, everything just fits so wonderfully. They had all the same ideas we had about where it should go and how it should work, and they were really positive. they're building the kiosk for us, and we're not going to be their employees, whatever. It'll be our store, but it's in their bar, and they've been really generous.
So when you say design for women, what does that espouse, really?
Well, I mean, we make clothing that we hope lesbians will like. I mean, the clothing that I like. I mean, we make all kinds of different things. We have a lot of rubber clothes. We make, you know, hats and corsets and shorts and all sorts of different things like that. We have, you know, little tops, sort of like bras out of stretchy lycra material. And I really like making rubber hats. I've been going into that a lot recently. We have our little saddle hat and various different things like that. And
are rubber shorts comfortable?
Well, they're not meant to be comfortable, but they're all right.
I mean, right.
Well, we do them. We've done a couple of ones that are laced up the sides, so they're not that bad, or else they have lycra in the crotch and whatever, so they're not that uncomfortable. And, you know, or if you have a really tight corset, I mean, it may not be the most comfortable thing in the world, but it looks really hot.
It's really hot. And you're just wearing it maybe for an evening, right? So you can just wear it that evening.
Well, I mean, we do have things that are more comfortable. I mean, yeah. I've made a whole line of sort of dyke tops, just says dyke on it in rubber.
So
you
it's
know,
gonna
cotton.
Be a lot of different things, though. Not just
lots of different things. No rubber. We like rubber, so we're playing with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we do a lot of like cotton stuff, stretchy things, and we've made a line of raincoats and sweatshirts and that sort of stuff. And what we'd really like also to do is have other lesbians in town, if they're artists or something like that, if they make jewelry, if they would like to come to Kiev and say they'd like to sell something there, if it fits or if we like it, we'd probably be. We're going to be selling, you know, cigarettes, candy, condoms, gloves, lube, probably. Not right away, but we don't want to shock anybody too much right away.
We'll break them in gently.
That's right. Lesbians in Montreal, I got to break them in gently.
And the name of the place is going to be?
Is Le Point G, the G-spot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, an appropriate name. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun coming up with that. We got this little a black circle and put a white G on it, and we held it up to people and said, what is this? And they're going... what is that? What is that? G for gay? No, okay, that's Le Point G? Yeah, it's like, yes.
Ooh. So you make some t-shirts with that?
Yes, we're going to do the logo. We're also making, right now we're making sweatshirts for Kiev too, so they will be available at the kiosk.
This is, it's a wonderful kind of a partnership here, I would think. Or, I don't know if it's, if I could technically call it a partnership. Really,
well, yes, in a certain sense it is. I mean, we're doing business in the sense that, you know, we're in their space and they both brings money to this the place. You know, we will bring in a certain clientele, mm-hmm. and they will serve us by having clientele there mm-hmm. as well. So
you think it's high time, really, that there's a kiosk like this, a place that sells clothing mm-hmm. and sex toys you were talking about earlier as being a possibility?
Yeah, not right away, but there needs to be some place also women, I mean, we can only come up with so many ideas, so if women come to the kiosk and would like to have something that's not there, we would probably love to make it for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't really want to have to get into making too many special orders because they take a lot more time, but if we can make something that would be a regular pattern, you know, we would like to do that, like, you know, special kinds of body suits or whatever, I don't know, pants, or we're going to do boxer shorts, you know, those kind of things, different.
This must entail quite a lot of work, I guess. How many people have you got working for you in the company?
Well, right now there's me, Merrick, and Didi, and so it's just the three of us working on this. We've had some people who've helped us, like our friend Claudine. She's helped us do publicity previously, and now the girls at Kiev, they're building the kiosk. They were doing that today. You know, Chris was there with her hammer. I'm sure you all know Chris from Kiev. She was there building it, and José was helping build it, and there's just lots of stuff to do this week. We have to do all of the étalage, you know, all of the, I can't even speak English anymore. We have to be able to place everything properly, and there's just so many last-minute things to do. You know, it's like today we went out and bought a whole bunch of new buckles and all sorts of stuff like this, because we make lots of belts and suspenders and things like that, too.
Are you going to be working in the kiosk?
Oh, yes. We are quite poor at the moment. So right now, we spent all of our money this summer investing in the business. You know, we had to buy all of our machinery and all of the material, and it doesn't seem expensive, but it really is expensive because you don't have an income coming in really while you're doing that. You know, we've been building our stock, and we've been selling some things. We've done special orders for some people and that sort of stuff, but, you know, testing new patterns and trying to figure out what might sell and what might not sell. So we've been really working on that, and so, first of all, it's just going to be me and Merrick and Didi working in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess there might be some men who might ask, well, why isn't there stuff there for us? Because since Kiev is a, quote, mixed bar, it's mainly women, but there are men who go there. If they want to buy unisex stuff, that's okay, but we're not going to have anything focused for men at all.
Don't men have shops anyway that focus on...
Oh, more than enough. Yeah. I mean, anyways, there's pre-app. She's laughing at me.
No, but I mean, I ask that just because it seems rather the audacity of a man that would ask, you know, why aren't there stuff for men here? Well, because you've got other places to shop.
That's right.
Mm.
Well, I would feel good about going into a place that was, you know, looking for a lesbian clientele and had things that were really what I wanted to buy. You know, that's what we want to do. We really want to serve the community. We want to figure out what they want. I mean, Merrick sometimes, he likes to make sort of femmy clothes. And I'm like, okay, not all lesbians like to wear corsets or flouncy this and that. I mean, he really gets into doing historical type costumes, too. He really loves that sort of stuff. So I'm trying to tone him down a little bit. You know, it's like make some things a little bit more square or a little bit more butchy.
What's your role in the company? I'm just wondering if, since there's three of you, are there... Do you all sort of share all duties, or somebody?
To a certain extent. Didi has a full-time job, so she works that. And Merrick and I are full-time working. We have a workshop at home right now. We're going to move it fairly soon. And so we design and we sew. We work really well together, so, you know, we balance each other out. He goes off on one of his little tangents, and I try to bring him down more to lesbian reality. And but he has a good time with all the women at the bar, too. They really like him. He's such an easy man to get along with.
And who designs them primarily?
I would say he does more designing than I do, but I try to make things, I don't know, I always have finishing touches that really work well.
And how do you sew rubber, I'm curious? Is that by hand?
Oh, no, we have a machine. It's about 110 years old, I guess the machine is. It's an old Singer, a big black industrial Singer. And it sews through, well, it doesn't sew through leather, but it sews through almost anything. We've been dealing with aluminum. We've been putting aluminum onto our rubber for making suspenders and belts. And by mistake, we noticed that it sews aluminum, too.
How convenient.
Yes.
Again, to find out.
That's right.
You can probably work that in somewhere.
Well, we don't want to scrap the machine, so that was really by mistake that happened.
So you have this big machine in your house?
In our house. I worry about the downstairs neighbors. I haven't complained yet, but it really... It makes a big hum, you know. And then we have the overlock machine, and we have our regular Singer for zigzag and doing embroidery and stuff like that. So.
Good.
And then, of course, there's the riveting machine for putting all your snaps and other things on.
Oh, you've got all that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
We have more. We're wanting to get to more and more of that sort of stuff, but that'll come with time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's what you're doing is just classic small business, right? And you've got to start.
Oh, yes.
Usually you start out at home, and you start out with those who are involved and those who've got the idea and go from there.
Yes, it's interesting, too, because a lot of women are doing cottage industry businesses like this so that they can make their own employment, so that they're not...
Well, I don't really want to work for anybody else right now.
Exactly.
I enjoy spending the time that I do designing these things and working for something that I think is... I mean, I don't know if I could call it a service, but I guess it is a service to the community. It's something that's hard to find, and we're doing something that is appropriate in this community. And there should be a store for women here, for lesbians in Montreal, not just a bookstore, but someplace where you can buy other things, you know, or even fantasy items, stuff like that. I mean, nothing, so that things aren't as taboo as well, but also ordinary stuff.
So it's a non-exploitive business according to how you wish to make it, your own dreams and desires.
That's right, that's right.
And it'll just fit right in perfectly within a... in a bar that's lesbian-owned, and just the whole idea, really, that it's taking place in a woman's bar.
Yeah, and I like it, too. And also, on the plateau, it's a good place. There are a lot of lesbians around there. I wouldn't want to be in the village. I mean, there's lots of stuff happening soon in the village. There are more places opening up, but I don't really think I'd like to be there. It's just, when you walk in the street, it is such a male space.
Mm-hmm. And the plateau, well, according to what I've been seeing this past summer, is becoming more and more like Dykeville. Really?
Well, there's lots of things happening there, unfortunately.
Nice, right? It's nice to be up the hill, too.
It is nice to be up the hill, yeah. I know a lot of dykes who actually live farther up the hill, and I'm amazed there isn't like a lesbian restaurant or something farther up the hill.
Mm.
But we're hoping we'll bring in a certain clientele there to that area.
What's the address of Kiev? Do you know it?
Kiev is, I think, 518, it's 518 Rachel Est.
And that's just
at Saint-Hubert.
Saint-Hubert.
Yeah.
And do you want to plug Thursday night?
Oh, I absolutely forgot about that. How could I? This Thursday night at Kiev, there is a leather and boots party, which will be the opening of our kiosk, the Point G. So you should come and get dressed up, or if you don't want to get dressed up, come anyways, and we'll dress you up. But come... well, or rubber. Yes. So come and have fun, and you can talk to us and tell us what you think of the kiosk and any ideas that you have, and come and party. It should be a really good time.
It sounds,
Thursday night.
It sounds as if rubber could be the anti-vivisectionist leather.
I have heard that from quite a lot of vegetarians. Yes, people have been telling me this is the thing.
Yep.
I do, you know, I don't want to. I mean, we make rubber belts and stuff like that. So people who don't want to wear leather belts, we don't make shoes, but we don't make shoes. No, tights maybe, but I don't know.
And now you mentioned something as well about Halloween. This is jumping ahead a little bit, but just for so people can kind of, you know, think about
for
it.
For Halloween, actually it's on November the 1st, there's going to be a special party at Kiev, which is going to be a bal masqué. It's going to be a ball, and if you should come absolutely costumed up, but if you don't, they will hand you the little a little mask, little face mask for you to go in. And we're going to be doing a fashion show. Le Shape is going to be doing a fashion show. And it's going to be 17th century clothing. So there'll be paniers, you know, big hoop, not hoop skirts, but, you know, big puffy skirts and big wigs and corsets and all kinds of different things.
And are you going to be in it?
No, I don't think I'll be in it, but I'll definitely be dressed up. America's planned to make me a very tall red wig and a big green dress.
Ha, we'll know who you are.
That should be lots of fun. So that's going to be the bal masqué for Halloween. But people should come out this Thursday night.
Yes, come
encourage
out this
us.
Does it cost to get in?
On Thursday night?
Just curious.
Let me see. Oh, I don't even know if it does. I think it might cost $1 or $2.
Manageable.
But
very
I'm
manageable.
Not sure if it's true.
Okay.
If there's a cover charge, they usually give you a free drink or something like that.
Mm. Okay, so this Thursday night at Kiev is the opening of Le Point G, a new kiosk for lesbians.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tara. Elizabeth?
Yep?
Have you got something you'd like to say in the last 2 minutes?
No, I just think we should intro the song and go out, because
okay.
We're Dykes and Mikes.
Although, yes, we are Dykes and Mikes, but we Dykes and Mikes have... Actually, we have the opening of a new kiosk at Kiev, which is wonderful, but we also have the closing of L'Essentiel, which is not so wonderful. And, well, I don't know a whole lot about it. I've read bits and pieces about the closing, and basically it looks like they're going to close down in mid-October. Stress, finances, general tiredness have left the owners without any choice, apparently, but to close down. I mean, when the GST was introduced, I suppose that there was a lot of talk about the taxes and how that would affect both books and magazines, and I suppose that this is probably one of the first victims.
Mm-hmm. And also because it was the only all-women's bookstores with all-women's books, so that was quite unique in Montreal.
But, I mean, books are, I guess, expensive, but I think probably one of the gripes that maybe, from what I heard anyhow, is that, women just maybe didn't support the bookstore as much as they should have. Instead of buying the books from Kohl's or W.H. Smith, maybe we should have gone to L'Essentiel a little bit more often. In any case, it is going to happen on October 13th at 2 p.m. as a closing event. Mary Miggs will be reading from her book, The Company of Strangers. She was the lesbian who was in the movie. The event is free. And for now, L'Essentiel is located at 420 Rochelle Street East. Only a few blocks.
House of Hope, Tony Childs, from the soundtrack of Thelma and Louise.
Good night.
Night.